You're listening to Stateside. I'm Laura Weber Davis, in for Cynthia Canty. Last week, the city of Kalamazoo declared a climate emergency as a prompt for putting together a climate action plan. In a couple of minutes, we'll hear about the role of municipalities in combating a global climate crisis. But first, to explain Kalamazoo's decision is David Anderson, a city commissioner. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
So why now? Why did the city commission vote to declare this climate emergency now?
It was really driven by a citizen process. There is a group in town called the Kalamazoo Climate Crisis Coalition, and they came to a board that we have set up. I'm going to give another long name here, but it's our ECC. It's otherwise known as our Environmental Concerns Committee, which advises the City Commission. And they came to us particularly asking us to approve this resolution.
So had this been a conversation that started at the grassroots level or with the City Commission? I mean, at what level? Was it top down or bottom up?
I would say bottom up. Definitely grassroots. That said, the City of Kalamazoo does have an Environmental Concerns Committee, which has been in place for many years. These kinds of discussions have been occurring on that committee. I've been actually liaison to that committee for over a dozen years now. So I can tell you this, though. I would say 6-8 years ago, we had a hard time keeping the seats filled on this committee. Often, we wouldn't even have a quorum when we met. I'm not a voting member because I'm a liaison from the City Commission. But right now, we have a waiting list. There's just an increased interest, not only on city boards, but in the general community about issues related to climate.
So how does that make you feel?
Good, because I'm a committed environmentalist. I have for a long time. I guess if there's anything I feel bad about is the fact we're just doing this now. But I guess this is better, what seems like a bit late, but better late than never.
So talk to me about some of the effects of climate change that you're experiencing in Southwest Michigan that are really discernible.
I mean, it is definitely the case that we are experiencing greater weather changes. I think we've been experiencing winters that are not like previous winters. We're having serious thaws in the middle of winter and contributing to more flooding problems in Kalamazoo. Kalamazoo is a riverside town. So in many ways, we experience those kinds of flooding kinds of incidents.
And what are you hoping that will be actionable items that can come out of putting this plan together that will help Kalamazoo in the near and far terms?
This is the thing that I'm very excited about, is that there are a lot of great ideas. But one thing we have been very involved with over the last 2 or 3 years now is a very robust citizen engagement process. And we are calling that Imagine Kalamazoo 2025. We've had more interactions with involved citizens in Kalamazoo really than we've ever had before. So it is citizen input that is driving the work that we're doing. Out of all that, we already have work that is in our plan that we're working on. But more so, I think we are once again doing a community engagement process to create the specific activities that are going to be occurring in the city of Kalamazoo. I'll just lay out an example. There's an individual named Mark Lee, actually has a business, does energy efficiency work here in Kalamazoo. And he proposed to me a couple of weeks ago, what about this idea? What about taking advantage of a program we already have in Kalamazoo? It's called Building Blocks, where neighbors get together in a small geographic area. We provide some funding for facade, front, streetscape kind of improvements. Neighbors work together. So what if we took a program like that, measured the carbon footprint, let's say, for a block or two, and then we specifically did things so that a neighborhood could say, we as a neighborhood have reduced our carbon footprint by 20%. So I think things like that that energize people on the ground are going to be great things to do.
You know, as an environmentalist, I'm sure that you have encountered a number of skeptics, people who maybe roll their eyes or are less interested in the city tackling something like this. But have you received any direct pushback on the commission?
No.
So everybody seems pretty on board in the city that you've seen. Or at least I would say that probably the most vociferous voices have probably been those who want to see action.
That's the way it works, sure. So we definitely, I think the commission is on board. The certainly when people came out to advocate for this, I mean, it was a commission chambers packed full of people who were supportive of it. That all said, in many ways, this is just practical things that we can be doing and should be doing anyway. Even if you don't agree with certain parts of what may be occurring right now, no one can argue with the fact that it would be a good idea to help individuals save energy costs on their own home by weatherizing those homes. I mean, how can that not be a good idea? How can it not be a good idea to create safer walk places here in Kalamazoo so people can don't have to take a car everywhere that they go? People are moving into the city of Kalamazoo. So I think a lot of these things are practical kinds of ideas that will make a big difference for the city, but also even affect individuals, you know, cost to heat their own home.
The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change calls for rapid, far-reaching, unprecedented changes in society. That doesn't really jibe with the idea of necessarily being practical. So what might these major shifts look like in Kalamazoo that you think could be attainable?
I think that, as with all change, it's going to be incremental. And I'm familiar with that quote from the IPCC. And obviously, budgets only go so far. We will be planning in our budget to be making investments. And I think those investments are going to include what the city does itself. So that means, are we going to be moving our fleet to a more sustainable energy fleet motivation kind of activities? Are we going to be changing the way we build city buildings? Are we going to be addressing items in our own local building code that will help incentivize that sort of thing? Rapid and far-reaching, I think, is going to be far-reaching when more and more communities are doing the same kind of thing all around the country.
David Anderson, City Commissioner with Kalamazoo. Thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate it.
Joining us now to talk about the larger role smaller communities must play in combating climate change is Maria Lemos, Professor and Associate Dean of Research and Engagement at the School for Environment and Sustainability at University of Michigan. Maria, as we just discussed with David, the IPCC calls for rapid, far-reaching, and unprecedented changes in society. What must that look like in individual communities and municipalities?
Well, of course, it's all contextual, because where climate change impacts and actually meets people, meets actions and impacts, you know, systems, infrastructure, varies a lot, and it's contextual. But what's not contextual is that those kinds of impacts are getting more frequent, more severe, and thus responding to them is getting more urgent. And of course, cities, because they are the first order of defense in terms of those impacts, they have been poised to do that, and they have been doing it, I think, in higher rates than other units of the government, at least in the U.S.
You're saying municipalities have been better at responding to climate change so far because they are the first line of defense?
Yes, they have to respond. They have no choice, you know, because they are being flooded. They are dealing with heat islands. They are dealing with the everyday impact of having more rain, higher temperatures, and if they are in the coast, being affected by sea level rise, for example. So for them, it's part of the day-to-day things that they do. They respond to these kinds of events because it affects their citizens and affects their infrastructure.
The city commissioner that we spoke with from Kalamazoo says that in order for IPCC's far-reaching implications to work, it will really need to involve all communities making these big plans. How much should we be hearing from the state or the federal government to push municipalities along in that direction?
So ideally, you would like all the scales of government and with their different jurisdictions over, you know, how to deal with those impacts to be present. The other side of this, if they are not present, someone still has to do something about it. So if you think in terms of what the cities do right now, so they are for the most part, strapped in their budgets. They don't have a lot of money even to do the things that they have to do on a daily basis to maintain a city working. So ideally, if you think about all those jurisdictions, resources should be coming from higher jurisdictions to lower jurisdictions, because this is added. It's added to their load. But if those resources are not materializing, they still have to scramble, they still have to respond. So it's an unfair situation, but it's one as well that has led cities to think of, you know, other means in which they can continue to build their capacity to respond.
A few years ago, the state government was considering a ban on plastic bags. Mm-hmm. And so, there was a lobbying arm that put the kibosh on that, and it didn't happen. And it prevented municipalities from allowing the ban of plastic bags in municipalities. So how much of that do municipalities have to contend with when they're trying to fight a large-scale problem?
So if you think of climate change as a policy issue, you have two aspects of it. When you were talking about mitigation, which is actually decreasing the amount of carbon that we produce, then you can think of a role of legislation, tax, or regulation actually affecting what cities can or cannot do.
Sure.
But when you're thinking about adaptation, there is no excuse, you know, there is no other pathway. If your city is flooded, you have to deal with the flood. You know, if you need to retrofit your stormwater system because it's not being able to deal with the amount of water that you used to deal with historically, you still have to do something. So cities have to think about this. And then it's not like a top-down policy, because it's not about climate change as something outside of the city, but it's climate change hitting the city in the life that we live in the cities and how to respond to that.
So then would you say municipalities are far more equipped to deal with adaptation than mitigation?
They deal with adaptation because they have no option. You know, because if you are impacted, you have to respond. And you respond within the structure that you have, which is hazard mitigation or dealing with the impact in the infrastructure that you have. So they are poised because that's what they do. Do they have the resources to do that? No, that's why they are scrambling. And, you know, when you talk about people in the cities, especially in cities in the Great Lakes or actually cities all over the U.S., they wish that there was more help from other jurisdictions. But they are also saying we cannot delay anymore. We have to do something about it. And our main issue, I don't want to put words in their mouth, that's what they tell me when we are discussing issues exactly like yours, is that we wish we had more specific resources. And the first resource that they talk about is really human resources. Who is going to do it? You know. Who is available to do it, or flexibility in terms of using financial resources as well.
Well, to that end, how effective are climate action plans that municipalities put together, and how good are municipalities at making those reality?
Mm-hmm. A lot of research that people have done in terms of climate action plans is that there is an increase in the action to make the plan itself. How those plans actually come to fruition is an area for which we don't have a lot of evidence at this point. So one of the things that I do at the University of Michigan is that I co-direct a center for the Great Lakes that is funded by NOAA, and our mission is to increase the use of climate information. We work with a group of cities, 32 cities in the Great Lakes, which have formed a network. It's called the Great Lakes Adaptation Network. So we work with them, providing them with climate information, and the feedback that we have is that, you know, your information is great, but now I have to convince people in the transportation department, in the hazard department, you know, in other departments in the cities, on how can we come together and put that into action. So a lot of it is they have a lot of capacity to do many things, but they need extra capacity, further build that capacity to deal with climate change. It's making everything more difficult.
Well, let's talk about scalability. Is this a problem that is harder to tackle in smaller communities, or is the scale of the issue make it more difficult for larger cities?
It's a problem for smaller and mid-cities because of the resources, and also because they have less ability to attract resources. So what we call the first adopters, the big cities, you know, the Chicago and Detroit to a certain extent, but cities like Seattle, you know, the poster child, you know, the poster children cities for response, New York City, of course, the number one, they have many more resources that they can attract, private and public resources. While mid-sized cities, they are already scrambling on dealing what they have to deal, and this is you know, an extra burden that they have to face. So we focus especially on mid and small cities. The other thing that you have to take into consideration, and especially in the Midwest, is that this is a profoundly political issue. So, you know, in cities where, you know, there is a political fight over the idea if climate change exists or not, it's another layer of contention that you have to deal with. You have to convince your mayor, you have to convince your city hall that you have to do something about this. So, for instance, many of the cities with whom we work now are going to this direction of having a resilience director or sustainability director, like the city of Ann Arbor. But those offices are still small, and they need to grow much faster to be able to tackle the issues that are coming their way.
Tell me more about the political side of it. How do some of the more conservative communities deal with it head on without upsetting or offending the political senses of their constituencies? I mean, are they tackling it with different rhetoric, with different words and different lingo in order to get at it from a completely different angle than in just a strictly environmental one?
I think in practice, yes. Because it doesn't matter where you are in the political spectrum, and doesn't matter if you believe in climate change or not, if the number of storms that are hitting your city is increasing every year, you still have flooded streets, you have flooded basements, you have all the nuisance that having much more water than you can deal with your current infrastructure is bringing to you. So people are still doing it. But, you know, there are, so I have talked with some people that have told me, well, we talk about weather, we talk about storms, we talk about climate events, we don't talk about climate change when we are trying to garner support for something like this. And I think that this is not unusual, and that's not the only issue around climate change in which people are switching, you know, the frame to something that it's much more relatable to people. They can relate to the storm. They cannot relate sometimes with, you know, the attribution of those storms to climate change.
I think it's very easy to feel helpless, I guess, with the size and enormity of the issues and just think, oh, well, I'm just one person. Should people feel confident that working with their municipalities?
I think we have never had such a sense of urgency, especially after, you know, the last IPCC report. On the other hand, you know, we have this tremendous global mobilization for climate change. So you have this pendulum. You know, you are working with your cities, you are feeling more the impact of climate change, you are having to adapt. Adapting costs a lot of money. So what is the way to revert that? The way to revert that is actually mitigating climate change. And that is a more political issue because a city cannot mitigate alone. A city adapts more or less on its own, but it mitigates with all other cities around the world. So if we can think of this as a positive feedback system in which by you mitigating, using less electricity, maybe eating less meat, so there are many choices you can make in terms of mitigation, your life is going to be easier because you have to adapt less. I'm always optimistic about those kinds of things. And I think that we are in a situation now or in a time now that, you know, people are taking more personal responsibility for it.
Maria Lemos, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.